everybody. Welcome to the Jetstream podcast. Jonas Schwartz alongside Ralph Vacchiano, our SNY NFL insider. We just watched and hosted our coverage of Adam Gase's introductory press conference. A lot to get into, a lot of substance, some mannerisms. We'll get into it all. Before we do, let me just remind you, subscribe to the Jetstream just by searching for that in the iPhone podcast app. Wherever you listen to your podcast, please make sure to rate and review the show. So, listen, he came out. There wasn't a lot there. They did breakout sessions, Ralph. But what was your initial, before we get into, we're going to grade some of the answers and everything else. What was your reaction to what you saw? And heard.
That there wasn't a lot there.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing necessarily. I think Adam Gase was careful not to say a whole lot about anything, about his past, about the team that he is now inheriting. I think you have to kind of dig a little to get thoughts from him. You know, it sounded like he has taken a look back on what went wrong in Miami.
Get that sense?
A little bit. He's not going to come out and give you a whole list.
Point by point, yeah.
Right. But he did say, he talked about his offense near the end of his press conference where he said that, it wasn't what he wanted it to be. And he sees some things that went wrong. Obviously, there were injuries. He didn't have a lot of his key players. So at least he's looked back and tried to figure out why didn't this happen. He didn't talk a lot at all about what he's inherited, which leads me to believe that
Doc will be there.
Yeah, of this, other than Sam Darnold, you see a lot of changes on this Jets team. And I thought a couple of the most interesting things there, one of them was he talked about how he didn't have any desire for total control over player personnel after he had it in Miami, which I think is a good thing because I think it's not always good for a coach to have that. And obviously he has to work with Mike Maccagnan, who does have that total control.
No doubt. And it made me wonder, and we had on the podcast last week Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, and he said that he thought Gase was overwhelmed by having control of the 53-man roster, especially in concert with all of his other duties. And for him to say, I never wanted it, one, it could be he learned from it and knew he wasn't getting it anyway.
Right.
And two, could be, let me just focus on the coaching. I actually thought that was all right. And I thought his reading of what went, I think you're right. There were some hints that he understood what went wrong in Miami. It wasn't as simple as, it wasn't me, it was the owner, who, while a smart man in life, is not a good football owner, and so I'm putting it all on him.
Right, and by the way, how dysfunctional are the Miami Dolphins?
Right.
They gave total control to a guy that didn't necessarily want it.
Right.
And look, I don't know that I'm sure when they offered it to him, he said, of course, this is a great idea, but it did sound like over those 3 years, he started to realize that this is not my strong suit. And a lot of people who watched the Dolphins over the last couple of years started to really believe that a lot of his problems were with the fact that he had control over the roster. So when he's a disciplinarian, and when he got angry at a guy or thought he's not buying into the program, a lot of coaches will say, okay, I've got to find a way to work with him. He would get rid of them, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
One of the most telling answers in the press conference to me was Christopher Johnson on one of the reasons why he chose Adam Gase. He's coaching football where it's going. To me, that's why he took Gase over Mike McCarthy, who I think, this is me reading between the lines, obviously he didn't say it, but it's me reading between the lines that he thinks McCarthy coached it where it was and that Gase is coaching it where it's going. Fair or unfair?
I think that is fair to an extent. I wonder when I hear that if there isn't a little ageism going on. Mike McCarthy's 55, and the way this league is going, you see a lot of coaches closer to Adam Gase's age of 40 years old. It's becoming sort of a young man's game, where years ago people wanted more experience. Now they're looking for young guys who seem to be innovators. I don't know how you look at the Miami Dolphins the last 3 years and think, wow, they're on the cutting edge of offense. There's no evidence to that. There was when he was within Denver and in Chicago before that. But certainly the last 3 years, it didn't play out that way. But I think he comes off as a young, bright, forward-thinking offensive mind.
All right, let's get into grading some of the answers. So we've talked about some of these answers already, and there'll be a couple others that we get into as well. How'd you feel? What grade would you give him on answering the Miami mistakes question? What grade?
I would give him probably a C. I think there's going to be a lot of middle-of-the-road mediocre answers here, or mediocre grades, because he acknowledged it, that I have to learn from what happened in Miami. He didn't say, one of the worries you'd have is that he would look back at Miami and say, I've learned to stick with my plan and do what I want to do.
Right.
Something didn't work.
Right.
So at least he acknowledged some things went wrong. I would have liked to have heard some specifics, but in fairness, I doubt he's going to go point by point because we would have made a list. And on the first Jets pregame show, we would have said, here are the five things right. that Adam Gase says right. he has to do right.
Right. You gave him a C. I'll give him a B minus. And the reason why is, number one, I've listened to Todd Bowles for the last 4 years. So it felt like it
everything
was Rex,
sounds
felt like Rex Ryan to me for a second, even though it was much more guarded than that. But after Bowles, everything sounded like, you know, it sounded like a comedian. And I thought there was some acknowledgement of some things, which after watching Bowles, or if you watch, you know, Bill Belichick, and Bill Belichick can do whatever he wants because he coaches like he did yesterday. But, you know, there was some acknowledgement of things had to change a little bit, and that some acknowledgement of that he took stock in what did not go right. I was impressed by that. He at least admitted that, you know, yes, he was watching and trying to figure out how to do things better as he was going. Now, only time will tell us, Ralph, whether he actually really meant that. But he convinced me, at least in this setting, that he has thought about it.
He also convinced me a little bit of that, not in the press conference, but in an interview with Arjanae Coakley yeah. after that, where he said, you know, he wants to be a player's coach, but probably isn't.
Right.
At least
right.
that's some self-awareness that sometimes you don't get in coaches.
Yeah. All right. How did he answer? We talked about the personnel control question. What grade are you giving him for that answer?
Oh, I think that was a good answer. I gave him a B-plus on that. You know, he had power in Miami, whether he wanted it or not. And he was honest about how maybe that wasn't the best idea, but he dismissed it pretty quickly. You would think that a guy who had power is going to want it at his next stop, and he didn't even make that part of the discussion. It was, I didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
End of story.
I'll go along with your grade. You said B+. I'll give him a B+. And the reason why I'll do that is I thought he had a good answer prepared. And it wasn't, he could have gone a couple different ways. And I don't think they would have been as good. He could have gone with the, hey, I don't have control, Mike has control, but, you know, Mike and I are going to work hard together, and I have my views, and we're going to make sure we get those views in. None of that. He was just very, you know what, I don't need to have it. Mike's here. We're going to work well.
Yeah.
That's it. I thought that was a very good way of handling it. And I thought one of the most convincing things he did in this news conference was convince you he didn't really care about the 53-man roster. Now, he could say that now.
Sure.
The minute he wants to get rid of somebody and Mike Maccagnan says no, right. we'll see then.
Right. The proof is in when they their first roster discussions and, boy, I really want this wide receiver and Mike Maccagnan really wants to draft this defensive end. How do they work together then? So we'll see. It's all is good right now.
And by the way, that comes up because there are stories from the Todd Bowles era, okay, and we both heard them, that – you know, Bowles wanted to crack down more on players, but Maccagnan wanted to trade Sheldon Richardson, so you couldn't do it. And obviously, there's spin. There's spin from all sides there. But those stories exist. So you never know until you see how it all plays out in real time.
Right. And honestly, stories like that happen in every
right.
organization.
You never know what's true or what's not or how much is true.
No question. What it becomes is how well do you work together? A coach might have an argument over, I want this guy, I want to do this, and the general manager just doesn't want to do it. But can they find a solution that works for everybody and have them move forward, which is something we're just not going to know. They're all getting along right now. We'll see the first time there's conflict.
All right, let's get to the grade for how did he answer in your mind the bad Miami offense question? What grade would you get from that one? It was an interesting answer where, again, he talked about essentially, Ralph, how he gave away, didn't give up, but he wasn't so concerned about statistics, more concerned with winning. So he sort of gave up stats, if you will,
yep.
in order to be in games. What'd you make of that?
That's another C for me. I think it was probably an honest answer for him that, you know, he had to readjust what he did. He also talked about how he didn't have all his players there, which is true, but a little bit of an excuse-making thing that, you know, your job is to just win. Now, again, he said he had to tailor things a different way. I would have liked to have heard a little bit about why this offensive genius that got so much out of so many quarterbacks couldn't get that offense to play better. Is it really, was it the personnel? If that's what he believes, get more into that. But he should be, you want your coach to be able to look at the personnel and say, this is what I have to work with. I'm going to make it work somehow. Obviously, his play calling, his scheme wasn't as good as it should have been.
What grade did you give?
I gave him a C.
C. All right, I'm going to go B minus on this. I liked it better than you for these reasons. I thought Todd Bowles was very slow to adjust to a lot of things. And I think one of the things that Gase sold me on a little bit here was that he is willing to adjust in any way, shape, or form to win a game. And I'll give him this. The overall record does not back that up, but the record, which is very good in close games, maybe does.
Right.
So the fact that he brought up how he tore up the playbook when he was the quarterback's coach and Tim Tebow came in. Mike McCoy was also the offensive coordinator there, so he deserves credit as well. But they flipped the script upside down for Tebow. That willingness to adjust, and again, the willingness to adjust with whatever, as he sold it to whatever Miami personnel he had to subjugate stats for wins, maybe showed, and maybe I'm just looking at this with rose-colored glasses, because, listen, I'm going to have to watch all these games. We got to cover it. You want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm looking at it with, you know, too much of a rosy view here, but I think he sold me a little bit on his willingness to adjust to get done what he needs to get done.
Right, and I think that, you know, certainly he's known as an innovator, a guy who can tear up his playbook and make different things work. We also, though, have to acknowledge that one of the criticisms of him in Miami that rubbed players the wrong way was down the stretch, some players thought that late in his career there, some players thought that, you know, they were built more for a running team, but he was stubborn in riding Ryan Tannehill. So, you know, now that also could just be sour grapes from players. We heard that with Jets players who didn't like the way Jeremy Bates was calling plays and they should have opened things up a little bit more. Well, sure, that's a good thing for them to say, but you know, who knows if they had the personnel to do that. So, you know, we don't know yet, again, until we see what he can adjust to with the Jets.
All right, let's get to the last grade we're going to give for answers. We've had a bunch from Gase. Let's get to one from Christopher Johnson. This really was the soundbite of the news conference, in my mind. Here is Christopher Johnson on if he was going to issue a playoff mandate.
I do have high expectations, but there will be no playoff mandate. Absolutely not. I'll never do that.
All right. That's a very interesting answer, Ralph, in that, I mean, he's doing, well, great, and then I'll break it down. Go ahead.
I'm right in the middle on this. It was a terrific moment in the press conference. I'm going to say B because I think it's the only answer he could have given. He's backed himself into a corner with the Mike Maccagnan situation because he fires Todd Bowles, keeps the general manager that has been there the entire Todd Bowles era. He can't really give Mike Maccagnan a playoff mandate and say, you've got a new coach, now get this done in 1 year. It's really not fair. They're almost, in a way, starting over. So he's sort of backed himself into a corner. But I guarantee you that if you listen to the call-in shows or look at Twitter, fans are going to hate that because it's going to sound like you're willing to settle for some level of mediocrity, that if we get close but we don't get to the playoffs after not having been there for what feels like 100 years, we're going to be okay with that. So that's going to resonate poorly, but I don't know that he could have had a better answer. If you say playoffs are bust with this team, you're condemning the two of them to 1 year.
Now, I thought it was interesting. I give him an A-, and I'll tell you why. He acknowledged the fans deserve better.
Yep.
And that he has high expectations, because that is a change. There's no more of this, you know, with Bowles, it was always, well, you know, there was this sense of they were, you know, after year two, there was a sense that they broke it down, right? This didn't feel like, I felt like he wasn't giving a playoff mandate, one, because he doesn't ever want to put that onus on his people publicly. Two, who do you give the mandate to, the coach or the GM? Who are you giving it to?
Yeah.
Can't give it to the coach, it's year one for him.
Right.
Maybe you can give it to the general manager. But I don't know. And do you want to say that publicly? No.
No, if you give it to the general manager, too.
Are you giving it to the coach?
Right.
Right. That's
but if
fair.
You say to the general manager, here's your mandate, and then you hold to it and he's gone. Now you've got a new general manager coming in who might want a new coach.
Totally.
You've just become the clown show franchise that everybody fears you're going to be.
But I almost feel like, well, you're right. But I almost feel like the mandate is more directed to Maccagnan to come through with the $100 million in cap space. You know, remember, Maccagnan was the same guy who really, and to the Jets' benefit, they did not get him. Said they got Sam Darnold. Wanted Kirk Cousins. Couldn't get him here for an interview.
Right.
Couldn't get him for a meet and greet. So while we all have, and myself included, these great plans for $100 million and Le'Veon Bell and Dee Ford and who knows who else, let's see him get him in the building. He has not proven he can do that yet.
Yeah. And look, you know, if you want to get a better answer that maybe could satisfy the fans who don't want to hear about mediocrity, maybe the answer could have been, I expect the playoffs. We're building towards a championship team. Nothing less will do. I'm not going to be crazy enough to give a mandate and say we have to get this done. We have $100 million in cap room. I trust Mike Maccagnan to spend that wisely. even if you don't, although he's not going to say that.
Right.
We're building something towards the future, and we will get to the something where it energizes. That was my one criticism.
Said he had high expectations, though. That didn't cover it enough. That wasn't enough, not enough oomph.
I would have thrown the word playoffs in. I mean, we're kind of nitpicking here. If there was nothing, my criticism of this press conference would have been there was nothing in there that energized me, nothing that made me go, wow, they got this right. They're moving in the right direction. It was very, very bland overall. And, you know, I don't, maybe that's just it just is what it is. We don't have a Rex Ryan here. We don't have a General Tom Coughlin. We just have hope that maybe they're going to get it right in the future.
Yeah. I mean, look, listen, I like that he acknowledged that the fans deserve better because you don't often hear that. And it didn't strike me, by the way, as window dressing. I think there are some owners who would say that, you know, it doesn't mean,
but really and maybe because they're buying tickets.
And listen, maybe because I've spoken to the guy a couple, you know, a time or two, I believe it. I think he does care. I think it means the world to him to show that he is the guy for this. Having, I don't want to say lived in his brother's shadow, but I mean, you know, his brother was front and center and he was in the background. Mm-hmm. So maybe I do mean that. But I mean, I think it means the world to him to give this fan base what they want. Whether he knows how to do that, it's a different matter. But I think it means something to him. But I just think you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Brody Van Wagenen comes out and says the Mets are the favorite in division and people kill him.
Right.
Right? You give a playoff mandate, people are going to kill you. You don't give it, people are going to kill you. I don't think it's ever productive to do that.
I agree. And that, you know, look, I didn't give him a failing grade. I gave him a B right in the middle. I just think that fans heard that and thought no playoff mandate and thought, oh, geez, he's going to be happy with 8-8 and mediocrity. And quite frankly, not to be insulting, Jets fans are going to overreact. I don't think they were thrilled with this hire to begin with. I know it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that they're going to go nuts. They weren't thrilled with this hire to begin with. They, as much as they're going to kill you, they wanted a guy who I think came in and, you know, had a championship pedigree and said, we're going to win this. I think when Rex Ryan came in, even though he had no history of being a head coach, I think people felt like
they were energized.
We're going to go in. And
especially after Mangini.
Right. Now, he got up to the AFC championship the first year.
The act wore thin.
If they were 4-12, we would have been laughing a lot earlier.
Right. And some of us, by the way, you forget how that year played out. A lot of people thought, remember, it looked like they were going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people that thought there was a little too much bluster. But as you said,
you win.
AFC championship, AFC championship. And people loved the bluster.
Right.
What was your favorite moment of the presser?
Oh, there were so many.
Yes.
It was so exciting.
There wasn't.
You know, that Christopher Johnson quote, I think, to me was probably my favorite moment. It gave an insight into what he was thinking and how this is sort of a long-term thing. There wasn't anything that Adam Gase said that I grasped onto and thought, wow, there we go. You know, this was a moment where my eyebrows were raised a little bit. Like, what is he saying here? What's he really thinking? And he's thinking it's a long-term project. So I liked that moment.
Yeah.
Such that it was.
Right. I mean, look, I thought, you know, we've already sort of covered it. I liked his willingness to adjust. Now, your question, your point about did he do it enough in Miami? Probably not. But I liked his answer about tearing things up to work with Tim Tebow. I liked his answer about subjugating stats in Miami if it was going to get him wins. Now, is that really the story? Probably not. I mean, who knows? We'll find out as it plays out here. I liked some of those things. I liked Christopher Johnson, you know, saying he had the high. I liked him speaking to the fans a little bit. I don't mean to knock Todd Bowles, but there was so little willingness to connect with the fan base for so long. Todd Bowles just didn't, and he never said it to you. And I do believe he always wanted to connect with the fan base. He just didn't know how. Or maybe it just wasn't of his interest, but there was so little talk to the fan base for so long.
Right.
And
I don't know that he did want to connect, honestly.
Maybe. You're probably right.
For his entire tenure, I kept hearing how, wow, he is such a great guy.
Off camera.
Funny guy, off camera, behind the scenes. And I saw a little of that, too. But this is the persona he wanted to have in front of the camera. He wanted to be, I don't know if he thought about it exactly in this way, but a mini Bill Belichick. And as we've discussed many, many times, that works when you're going 8 straight AFC championship games, not when you're losing 10 games a year.
Let's get to this next section of the podcast, which is the presser's easy, although not always, and not for some. What's day two for Adam Gase? And I got to tell you, day two is obviously, because he's spoken it at length and tied himself up every which way, is about getting his staff together.
Yes.
What did you make of all this with the One of the things he said he learned from Miami was don't put the staff together too quickly, but then talked about the importance of the priority of putting the staff together.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think he made it sound like he chose some assistants in Miami in almost a panic.
Now, I want to ask you, think, and he didn't reference it, you think he was talking about the offensive line coach who got caught, in all seriousness, in a very compromising position, doing drugs on his desk in the building?
Yeah, no, I don't know what his previous relationship with him was or how quickly he hired him. I wouldn't doubt that at all. I think there might have been a guy or two on his staff who he hired, you know, he was trying to find assistance and, you know, somebody recommended this guy. He said, okay, let's do it. Let's get this staff together. And maybe once he brought him in, he didn't mesh philosophically with him. I think that's a possibility as well. But clearly he wasn't happy with some of the guys he ended up with on his first staff with the Dolphins. So he made it clear he wanted to take his time. He didn't have any assistants to announce on day one. Sometimes coaches do. We've heard about Dowell Logans, the offensive coordinator that supposedly he's going to bring with him from Miami.
Brant Boyer sticking around.
Yep.
Special teams coach.
Yep. Special teams. Greg Williams possibly coming as his defensive coordinator. None of that, though, was in place enough for him to say, here's my staff. Obviously, he wants to take his time and make sure he gets it right. And that sounds like it will be his biggest project for the next week.
You know, no question. But I'm going to tell him, and let me give him one piece of advice that I think he knows already. I understand the focus is going to be on that staff now. Focus is always on Sam Darnold.
No question.
Always. You can fire staff members. You can't fire Sam Darnold.
Absolutely.
That better work and get going quick. And I have every expectation that that end of it will, actually.
I would assume it will. And, you know, they share an agent. They have already been in communication. Sam Darnold was part of the process. I would assume that they are going to talk at length this week and going forward as much as they are allowed. They're in a period where they're not supposed to be talking about football, so that will change soon enough. As soon as they can get on the same page, they will. But I'll even add that, you know, he's got to build his relationship not just with Sam Darnold, but other players who are key to the team. We saw this with Pat Shurmur and Odell Beckham.
It's a good point.
A year ago. I think that, you know, he's got to make sure, Adam Gase has to make sure that Jamal Adams is an ally of him. Jamal Adams spoke out a lot on Twitter about coaches he loved. Cliff Kingsbury was one. There was a gap before he announced that he was happy with Adam Gase. It may have just been, I'm not going to say that Jamal Adams had, maybe there was an issue of timing, maybe he couldn't get to Twitter, whatever it was. But Adam Gase has to make sure that Jamal Adams becomes one of his guys, because clearly he's a leader in that locker room, and a locker room that over the last few years desperately needed leaders.
It's a great point. We focus so much on Darnold because it's an offensive guy coming in. He better get along with Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
Because that's another guy you're not getting rid of.
Yep. And Leonard Williams, if they decide that Leonard Williams is going to stay. And I don't know who else on offense, but whatever guy is in there, if he finds an offensive lineman who he says he's going to be key, make sure you talk to him. Make sure that group, every coach needs his guys. That group of four or five guys have to be on the same page, have to be happy with the hire. I'm sure he'll bring some guys with him from Miami as well. But if he doesn't develop his core guys, he's going to be lost. Because as soon as things, if he has the issues that he had in Miami where players aren't necessarily happy, you need those guys to be able to say, hey, get on board. We like this guy. If he doesn't have that, he's going to be in trouble.
All right. You got to be a psychiatrist for Jet fans out there right now. All right.
It's
a role you play. Yes. and I certainly would fit into more of the, you're the psychiatrist. I am the uncertain Jets fan. Convince me this is a good hire. Sell me on this.
Well, first of all, you're never going to be happy. So let's just get that out right now.
Yes.
No, you would have been miserable. And I don't mean that. Well, I do mean that as a joke, but not completely, because I don't know.
Oh, well, let me respond by win, and maybe I win for once, and it won't be a problem.
Oh, there you go. Then you'll be sad that you can't be miserable anymore.
No, I won't. People say that, yes.
Listen, there was no candidate out there that was going to be the perfect guy. I thought they should have hired Mike McCarthy. I don't know that a lot of Jets fans would have gotten behind that. I heard retread. He couldn't win with Aaron Rodgers despite all the winning he did.
Right.
I think
went stale, right.
Yeah. I don't know that there was one coach out there that you could have, as sad Jets fan, could have rallied around. So look at the positives of this guy. 3 years ago, he was the coach that everybody wanted. He was Sean McVay. And what's happened in the 3 years since was he coached a team that had a dysfunctional organizational setup and had a franchise quarterback who, A, wasn't all that good, and B, missed exactly half the games. I don't know that he got a chance in Miami. So maybe give him a chance here. You're starting to build something towards the future. You didn't get Sean McVay, but you got the guy who was Sean McVay 3 years ago,
right.
And that's a good thing.
Right, and if he's learned, maybe it can be again.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. And you got to sell me on – if you sell me on he's learned, if you sell me on he can unlock Sam Darnold further, then this can work.
Yeah.
You know, then you're not selling me, then you're being real. I mean, it can work if he's willing to adjust and learn his lessons.
Right, absolutely. And I don't know.
And you know, this was not my hire.
Right.
This was not the guy, you know, we talked about this throughout the process. He was not my choice. But if he learns from what happened, there's a football intellect that's remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you have to look at it in the context of the field of candidates. They had three assistant coaches that they interviewed. We have no idea what they would have been. That's a crapshoot when you're interviewing assistants. They could be the next Sean McVay. They could be the next Ben McAdoo. You don't know. The college coaches, to me, they interviewed Cliff Kingsbury, Matt Rhule. They talked with Matt Campbell of Iowa State. That is a huge disaster waiting to happen to me. Not a lot of college coaches with no NFL experience succeed. The head coach available, guys that were out there was Mike McCarthy, who I liked a lot. Jim Caldwell, 63-year-old, not a candidate that excited a lot of people.
The only one who could be as boring as Todd Bowles.
Exactly. So given the field out there, there was no Bill Parcells out there. There was no Andy Reid out there. And by the way, when Andy Reid went from Philadelphia
to Kansas City, he was Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, he was Mike McCarthy. A lot of people,
thought he was stale.
Adam Gase, a lot of people have questions about that. A lot of times coaches in their second job do a lot better because they've learned their lesson.
All right, let's, Ralph, good stuff. We appreciate it as always.
Thank you.
More podcasts are to come as we get closer to the draft and free agency. Certainly the Jets with that $100 million, Le'Veon Bell, all that's going to ramp up in March. Well, we will be back then, but that'll do it for us for now. Remember, as we leave you, subscribe to the podcast. Just search for the Jet Stream in the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please make sure to rate and review the show. That'll do it for us. For Ralph, I'm Jonas. We'll see you soon.